Hi there. My name is Matt Eisenegger and welcome to my podcast, CV Focus for ITTHub.net. Over the coming weeks and months, I'll be chatting to key people in the commercial vehicle world about emerging technologies, industry issues and much, much more. Enjoy. Welcome to this morning's CV Focus. Now, joining me today, a very, very special guest indeed, is Steve Winter. Now, Steve's head of the fleet business for Centrica. Morning, Steve. You okay?
Yeah, morning, Matt. Very well, thanks.
Good. Listen, just before, I mean, we know the name Centrica. A lot of people, probably a lot of the listeners don't really know what the association is between Centrica and British Gas. Could you let's just set the scene. Just explain to how the business works and where you sit in that organisation.
So, Centrica is our group. So Centrica is a worldwide organisation that British Gas sits within. And we have a number of businesses. So there's Centrica Business Solutions within that group that look after energy management and new developments in those sort of areas for us. Also, we've got businesses like Dyno. So Dyno Rod are part of British Gas as well. And Centrica, and we also have PH Jones that are part of Centrica Group. They also deal with our social housing and things like that. And Local Heroes is also part of the Centrica Group. So there's a number of companies in there. British Gas is the biggest part of it. And I sit within British Gas because that's where the biggest fleet is, somewhere approaching 10,000 vans. And so British Gas has the fleet department and we operate the fleet across the whole of the Centrica group though.
So 10,000 vehicles, about that takes a little bit of steering, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, since I've been here or since my time with British Gas, we have reduced the fleet team quite a bit, really. We started off with about 15 people in the fleet team when I joined. We're down to six at the moment, and we outsource an awful lot of our fleet responsibilities. And so those team of six of us really manage our suppliers to deliver that service. So it's quite a small team, but yeah, it's one of the biggest fleets in the UK.
I mean, obviously, we've covered it quite a lot on a few of the CV focuses we've done before. And we're talking about emerging technologies, we're talking about alternative fuels, electromobility and all these other things. Now, I would imagine with 10,000 vehicles, that's something that you will be giving sort of due consideration to at the minute. Is that correct, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, it's not difficult to imagine our fuel bill is significant. And so new technology around vehicles and the way we operate them is always, fundamental to us. There's a massive fleet budget to run that fleet. And the fleet needs to be available for our engineers to turn up at customers' houses, anytime, 24 hours a day. And so keeping that fleet mobile is important. But we started an EV journey in 2014. And some thought that was really early and probably I was one of those. But we now find ourselves in a really good position to adopt that new technology. But our business is moving that way anyway. At the end of the day, we're an energy company. We have businesses within British Gas that fit charge points and manage infrastructure projects for residential and commercial. And so our fleet really supports that and they support us moving to that zero carbon ambition that we have.
Now, you spoke. I know we had a brief sort of conversation yesterday, Steve, about the sort of infrastructure that you support. Can you just explain a little bit more about that to me?
Well, I mean, we have businesses within our organisation that fit charge points, and our vans that we're having for engineers at the moment. We've ordered just 1,000 new Faro E's at the moment. They're all going to be home charged. And so we're fitting 1,000 charge points to our engineers' houses. We've also got, we've developed an app which allows us to communicate with the van and the charge point. It allows us to check how much energy that engineer has put into that vehicle. But the really neat part about it is that feeds our payroll system. And so the engineer is recompensed for the energy they've used. which is great. It's a great way to farm our minds about how we were to do that, but it also enables that engineer to use that charge point for any other vehicles that they might have in their household as well, with no issues. So we're funding a charge point for them. They're able to use that charge point another way. So that's part of the thing we do with residential. But for commercial offerings, we do a similar sort of service. So we've done quite a bit of work with bus garages and infrastructure. We also fit solar PV panels to a lot of offices, energy management, and all those sorts of things that we're involved with. And our fleet gets involved to help support those projects as well.
Mm. So, going forward, I mean, obviously you've got aspirations to be carbon neutral or carbon zero, but what sort of timescale are you looking at across the 10,000 fleet, Steve?
So we signed up for the EV100 group last year, which said we wanted to have a zero carbon fleet by 2030. And as I said earlier on, you know, in 2014, we embarked on our journey. We took 110 Nissan EV200s, which was a real step change for us to move into that. And a lot of people, probably myself included, was a little bit dubious about that. And at the time, we made a commitment that we would have 10% of the fleet running on EV by 2017. And here we are in 2020, and we're just ordering 1,000 vehicles. That's our 10%. Because the market really hasn't moved quick enough for us at the time. But we're now into that, and so, you know, that's where we are. We're at 2030. I think personally, you know, vans I'm taking now on a 6-year lease, they'll be up in 2026. Mm. I suspect by 2026, those vehicles will all be replaced by EVs. Mm. So I do believe our zero carbon will come sooner than 2030, and I would think 2026 is when our commercial van fleet will be fully EV.
You made quite an interesting statement there, Steve. You mentioned about the reluctance you had to sort of move towards electric vehicles, electric mobility, and also you mentioned about so obviously there was the reluctance, and then you said the market wasn't moving quick enough. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think the vans we took in 2014, you know, they were 28 kilowatt. EMV200s, they were the first in the UK, and our engineers drove them, and we used them on a test track first to get our engineers, you know, really interested in them, and they were very keen to operate them. It wasn't without the hurdles. You know, we had hurdles with, you know, how do we keep the vehicle warm for the engineer during the day. At the end of the day, those engineers are going into people's houses with failed central heating systems and things like that, so they were getting cold. So we had to fit, you know, additional heating to them. See, and all those sorts of things you don't think about.
No, you just don't consider at all. I mean, you know, we think about electric vehicles as just being an electric vehicle, but as you say, from your engineer's perspective, they're going to be cold all the time, and obviously you've got an obligation to them to keep them warm in the workplaces, haven't you?
Yeah, and, you know, those vans were the first ones we'd ever seen, and certainly our engineers had seen, with electric heated steering wheels and things like that. But they kept saying to us, but my feet are cold. Their hands were lovely and warm, but it did affect the battery. And so the range we were getting for those vehicles was quite low. And I think it's taken really this amount of time before we've seen a viable product that suits our needs. You know, we have a certain amount of kit we have to carry with our engineers. So small vans are not always suited. You know, we have a set of ladders we have to carry, and they have to fit within the van. You know, some of the vans, if you put the ladders in, you'd smash the back window glass if you tried to shut the doors. So it needs to be a certain size of vehicle. And the Vivaro E is the first one that's come along that we've got to work on the TCO model. Mm. We've tested the range and confirmed the range is what we want it to do. And so we've been able to place that order. But in the meantime, in those 6 years, we've done over 2 million miles in those EVs. And that's given us a tremendous amount of experience around what the maintenance budgets will look like, how much energy we'll use in them, how we transition our fleet across, the training we have to do with our engineers to drive them, etc. Mm. So we're in a good place at this moment. And now the product's there, we will be going to transition our fleet quickly.
Well, I think if you look at the products and products that are out there now, I mean, there's been a real sort of revolution in the last few years about, I mean, it was always, electric vehicles have always been there, but they've never either been the, never had the range or never had the marketplace or the interest in the market to take them. I mean, that's changed so dramatically, hasn't it, over the last sort of couple of years. And I suppose from your perspective, you could almost be spoilt for choice now, couldn't you, with the amount of vehicles that are out there?
I'd like to be spoiled for choice because a bit of competition always helps when you're negotiating a deal, obviously. But yeah, there's a lot of vehicles out there, or certainly coming to market in the next 18 months or so, which is very exciting for us because it means we can adopt EV across our fleet and the different vehicle types we have, which is great. You know, the challenge we will have is, you know, all of our engineers go home at night, so they need home charging. They can't all have home charge points because they don't all live in a situation where we can fit a home charge unit. So we'll run out of engineers that can have home charging. So we'll need to start charging vehicles using public infrastructure or some other charge points. That does create its own problems for us because although our fleet is quite low mileage, something around 9,000 miles a year on average for them, and engineers do a normal daily hours, but they're on call as well. So they could go home at 5-6 o'clock at night and with a very much depleted battery, put the vehicle on charge and then get called out.
Yeah,
We need to have that resilience. So that's why the vans we've taken at the moment, we've taken with the 75 kilowatt battery to give us some resilience, to give that engineer some peace of mind that, you know, when they do go out on call, they're gonna get home safely. But it does mean when you fit these big batteries that the charge time goes up considerably if you're using home charge units. So there's a balance there, and then trying to find a network where we can charge outside of the home charge is the thing we're working on at the moment.
It's quite interesting because obviously for the listeners to CV Focus, there's going to be a lot of people that were probably thinking about starting a journey like you were in 2014, and the sort of reluctance. So you're very much an advocate for the emerging, again, electric vehicles, whatever you want to call it. But you did mention there that the selection of battery, the selection of the options is absolutely probably key in the process of getting it right first time, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've got quite a comprehensive total cost of ownership model, TCO model, that enables us to evaluate the EVs, and we compare them with diesels as well, because our business is not in that, you know, we're not doing this, we're doing this because it's a benefit to the business, to lower our CO2 emissions, to benefit the communities we work in, but it's also got to be at the right price. And you mentioned earlier about the cost of running a fleet, you know, our fuel spend is significant. So to save, you know, 10% of our fuel spend, that's a six-figure number. So if we can get that cost parity between diesel vehicles and a full electric, the fuel saving and the maintenance savings are the things that tips the TCO into the positive for us.
I mean, I don't want to talk in specific numbers. I don't want to really talk cost, but you mentioned 10% there. Is that what you're experiencing in fuel saving, or is it? Oh, let's say again, we talk about TCO, total cost of ownership, but if we factor all the maintenance in, we factor the fuel in, what would you see your percentage savings be?
I suspect we will be seeing between £800 to £1,000 a year benefit.
Per van. God, blimey. That's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah. But you have to remember, there's a number of other things that come into that equation, you know, silly things that you think wouldn't have that, you know, as we mentioned earlier about heating for engineers, you know, stamp duty changes has started to, you know, our engineers are thinking about moving house.
Yeah.
We've just fitted a charge point. So they move house, then we've got to think about, well, we've got to move the charge point now. So there's all those costs, you know, you have to think about. And then just delivering a van, you know, our commissioning centre is in the Midlands. If we're delivering a vehicle to Scotland, it's probably got to go on a transporter. Whereas we might have driven it before.
Yeah,
so there's also those sort of things that can add up and they can bite you as well. You know, things like we've got a fuel car for our diesel that a fuel car operates across any fuel station in the UK, which is great. But, you know, at this moment, you almost need a wallet full of cards to operate different charge points wherever you might go.
You know, it's quite interesting what you're saying, Steve, because, I mean, obviously, from my perspective, I mean, obviously, I mean, I'm sure the listeners are aware, I own a number of commercial vehicle magazines. And on the our van magazine, Trade Van Driver magazine, we obviously get, we're lucky enough to go test these vehicles in all kinds of environments. Obviously, obviously current circumstances at the minute are not allowing that, but we do get press test vehicles, appraisal vehicles for us to drive. Now, at the moment, I've got the new Mercedes-Benz Evito, and I've also got the Ford Transit Custom Pay-Head. Both were delivered on trailers, and the vehicle that the Ford vehicle that came yesterday was delivered by a very reputable delivery business, but with a full size car transporter vehicle. So where before we had to, you know, we'd get a guy or a girl with some trade plates, I used to be knocking on the door. Now they're ringing in advance to make sure that they can actually get the vehicle to the office. And I would imagine they're exactly the same situations that you're having to look at when you're delivering to your fitters.
Yeah, I mean, we're having to look at things the way we do things differently and challenge it. And goodness me, you know, we've challenged our views over the last year anyway, haven't we, with the circumstances we find ourselves in. But, you know, we have a sizable fleet all across the UK. So we've had to set up strategic hubs around the UK, which we'll store surplus vehicles in. So we'll probably deliver EVs into these strategic hubs by a multi-car transporter. And then we might get the engineer to come to that hub and do the vehicle swap there. Yeah. But you're right, you know, trying to deliver those vehicles can be a problem. I mean, generally it's all right. The van will do a couple of hundred miles on a full charge, and they'll leave the commissioning hub on a full charge. So you can get virtually everywhere you need to, but there are locations where it'll be more challenging. And we're not specifically picking out where we're going to place these vehicles. You know, they're to be placed across the UK, and we'll roll them out. And then next year we'll be looking at, you know, our replacement plan again. It's for another sizable number. And, you know, our leadership is saying to me, don't really want you to buy another diesel van unless you really have to. There will be pockets I have to buy small numbers of diesel. But we're going to move to EV as soon as we can, because we are seeing no benefit.
It's a complete reversal, isn't it, in the procurement process, where, you know, before you'd be buying diesel vehicles with the occasional electric vehicle, and it's a complete reversal now, isn't it, where electric vehicles become the norm, and we'll have to buy an diesel vehicle for this particular fitter for that particular location.
It's really remarkable, you know, as we say about since 2014, but to be honest, it's all happened in the last couple of years. And the next couple of years, we're going to see significant step change in this, you know, government legislation around, you know, 2040 or 2035 or whatever. You know, we're all sort of well-versed that date is going to come down. And, you know, we're just trying to move that transition quickly across.
I don't want to sound like a sort of a stuck record with this, and I've said it quite a few times on the podcast that we've done, but I think there's been such a massive improvement in air quality just through the COVID situation that a lot of people, a lot of organisations will be very, very reluctant to sort of go backwards. You know, we've seen the change now. Let's make the change happen even quicker.
Yeah, I am a little bit frustrated because we can all read about clean air zones being, you know, implemented. You know, a couple of years ago, people said all going to be implemented in 2021, 2022, etc. And we were planning for that because, you know, we have a strategy to exit our Euro 5 vehicles quickly because, you know, there was potential fines available that we would see. So we had a strategy to exit Euro 5 quickly, and certainly by the end of next year we will not have any Euro 5 vehicles on fleet at all. But that was on the basis that clean air zones were going to come in. And we've seen over the recent weeks, haven't we, that a number of councils said, look, we're going to put this on hold. Recent events have said that our emissions have dropped quite a bit and we'll review it in a year or two's time. That's a really difficult challenge for us because, you know, I need to take some vehicles now and I need to take them for 6 years. So I need to choose the right vehicle. So for us, the right vehicle at the moment is an EV because it'll avoid any of the administrative burden of clean air zones, ultra-low emission zones. You know, even the parking of a diesel van can be double the price of an EV or some more compliant vehicles. So we've got parking charges to worry about, clean air zone, and a way to avoid that administrative burden at the moment is to go EV. Then there's another piece of the TCO model that we don't naturally build in, those benefits, but we know what the penalties would be for our engineers. You know, they could go into two clean air zones in one day, perhaps.
Yeah.
And those costs soon mount up, and the administration of paying for those vehicles is significant.
Yeah, it's we're a real cross. Well, I think we've gone through the crossroads now. We're on the other side, aren't we? I mean, it's just happening so quickly. Steve, the amount of vehicles that you take, you know, you're a big player in the business anyway, regardless of whether you're looking at, electric vehicle technology or diesel. So you must have a very, very close working relationship with the vehicle manufacturers at the point of development.
I guess a lot of people would like to think we have, which is the same as any other organisation, really. But we do have a strong relationship. We buy direct from manufacturers. And, you know, a good example with that is, you know, when we're a safety-first organisation, as a lot of other companies are, and we started to see the active braking systems, you know, come in on vehicles. And we saw that coming in on cars first, which is another bugbear of mine, that this new technology comes in on cars before it does on vans.
Yeah.
But active braking came in onto cars, and it was almost standard fit. And then in probably 2016, 17, I think, Volkswagen launched it on their Caddy product as an option. It was quite a costly option, but we took that option because we'd seen that we'd taken active braking on our car fleet, which has reduced the number of accidents. So we took that as an option. And within a couple of years, you know, of us taking that option, Volkswagen included that as standard. And we worked really, really well with Volkswagen to develop things. So some of our Caddies had special springs on them and all sorts of things. So we do work with manufacturers quite closely. You know, the colour of our vans is a non-factory colour. It's a special colour that we have to get painted. And, you know, we have to work closely with manufacturers to keep that colour in stock in their factories to be able to spray them. But that means we have to order vehicles in batches. So we can only get that colour if we order X number of vehicles. So there's all sorts of things like that that go on with the negotiations with the OEMs.
Yeah. And obviously, do you form sort of working relationships or what do you call it? I suppose working relationships with other sort of public service organisations, not to sort of... increase your buying power as such, but just to share good practice?
Hey, we have conversations with all sorts of fleets all across the country, and in and out of the same sort of size fleets as us and other fleets. And you just learn, don't you? You know, it's one of those situations whereby, you know, we can pick up nuggets from other companies as to how they do things, and likewise we share information with those. But we don't have any formal agreements to joint buy anything or services or anything like that. But we do, you know, with some of the larger fleets, we do talk to them about, you know, when things are going to tender and things like that, because you don't want two or three tenders landing on a manufacturer's desk at the same time. You want them to pay particular attention to your tender, not share the resources around three tenders. So there is some conversations around that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, we talk to the major fleets very often, and my fleet engineer and myself, we have regular engagement with a number of working groups across the UK.
I want you to sort of look into the crystal ball at the minute. I mean, obviously we're well down the electric vehicle route now. And I'm talking just purely from a van perspective. Where do you see it's been in 10 years' time?
I'll have probably retired and probably won't worry too much about it, I guess. But I've hydrogen has got to be there somewhere, hasn't it? But we're still struggling with, you know, EV infrastructure at the moment. I think hydrogen will probably be coming along. We're already in discussions. We're already, you know, we haven't got any demo vehicles of hydrogen at the moment. But they will come along, I'm sure. And then in 10 years' time, you know, that technology will be quite strong. Mm. I'm not quite sure where we'll get to in terms of van technology. This was a big step change moving to EV. Mm. And we're not there. You know, 10 years will be 2030. That could be the ban of ICE vehicles anyway.
It's quite interesting what you're saying about the infrastructure just not being there for the amount of... I mean, I think there's going to have to be some real changes made there real quickly, isn't it, to be able to support the people, not just yourself as a commercial user, but the you know, private car users as well.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I said earlier on, our CBS business, Central Business Solutions, is looking at energy management and vehicle to grid and that sort of thing. You know, if you think if we've got a fleet of, you know, 8,000 plus electric vans... all with vehicle to grid capability. Mm. You know, we've virtually got a virtual power station within our fleet. Mm. So it's that type of thing around how we manage energy. And that's where our other businesses are looking at managing energy for commercial properties and residential and vehicles. Because, you know, we do need to generate electricity if we're going to be having that number of EVs. And we need to be able to charge them reliably, efficiently, and so that sort of infrastructure will have to grow, but it's managing that electricity energy as well.
I'll ask you the question, because I did ask it to Carlos Rodriguez from Renault Trucks a couple of weeks ago when we were chatting about, again, their range and electric vehicles and hydrogen technology. Now, I've been lucky enough to say I've been to various vehicle launches, product launches or product days where I've seen the things in action. Do you think, and I'm just thinking about the sort of charging infrastructure, do you actually think that the hydrogen technology, the electric technologies we know, EV technologies we know, it could be an interim technology before we get to hydrogen and could be quite short-lived?
I don't know about short-lived, but it will be a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. You know, very much like plug-in hybrids are at the moment. It's probably a stepping stone to EV where people are not quite ready to make that move to full EV. I think... You know, hydrogen will, at this moment in time, is still quite an expensive technology. Yeah. And it's very bespoke to certain areas of the country where there is refueling sites. It will come, but it will still be, you know, at the end of the day, it's still electric.
Yeah, it's electric, you know, electric vehicle technology, isn't it? But it's just done in a slightly different way.
Yeah, I think it will fill that niche, won't it, for larger vehicles where battery capacity is not possible due to payloads and things like that. So I think smaller vehicles will still remain EV, because why have hydrogen technology? Because you could just have an EV. But it will probably figure to vehicles that want extended range or carrying heavier loads or more commercial vehicles. So I think that will be, you know, yes, it could be a stepping stone, but I think there'll still be a place for it. In the future,
I tell you, as I say, it's just moving so quickly, isn't it? And I think from your perspective, yeah. I mean, it must be not difficult, because you're a professional person and you work in a very professional organisation, but to keep up with the technologies, it must be a real, real demand on yourself.
Yeah, I think one of the keys is surround yourself with good people, and you know, I've got a good fleet team sat around me, and you know, we have people that look at new technology all the time, and you know, we've got some great account managers that manage the frontline operation and deal with those issues and feed those back to us as well about, you know, what's going on, and you know, at the grassroots level with our engineers. And then we can react quicker. And then those new technology come into place. So there's all sorts of things we're looking at around, you know, the way we maintain vehicles. You know, our green parts solution about recycling our vehicles is saved us significant sums of money. And that was something we just struck upon and thought, well, let's give it a go. And we've been fine-tuning that for 5 years or more now, which is, you know, we've moved on to something else now and looking at other things, because we've done that. So I think it is about having good people around you that have got that vision to look to the future. But you need to keep the group, you know, the foundations need to be really strong. So our fleet management and things like that, we don't tend to worry about that, because it's all in place. It works really well. And we can concentrate more on the new technology and those interesting things that we all like to look forward to.
Steve, believe it or not, we've done half an hour chatting, and that's our allocated time. But I think from my perspective, from CV Focus and ITTHub.net and the listeners, it's been really sort of enlightening to sort of speak to somebody that's really is at the forefront of the commercial vehicle market with electric technology. And I think if there has been any listeners out there that I suppose are thinking about taking the jump but just not quite sure, I think you've probably laid any fears that may have. Steve, thanks very much for your time this morning. Absolutely great. And hopefully, well, we're doing this as a podcast, but hopefully we'll get a chance to meet each other in the not too distant future. Thanks, Steve.
It'll be really good not to be in a home office, won't it?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Steve,
no worries.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank you.